special technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
You are here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show on the Go Long Media Channel on Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the Cold Hard Truth on Sports. And run the social media sites for the Boxing Source on Facebook, Instagram, Google Plus, and on Twitter. So you can just follow those sites for updates and other news and whatnot. But right now we're here with the newest episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. You could call in to talk live at 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the 1 key to get on queue and be able to talk live on the show. We have an hour worth of live content for this week, pretty much covering everything that is, you know, going down at the Barclays Center last night, as we had a, you know, very intriguing card that happened there with the main event of Mikey Garcia versus Adrian Broner, which we'll be able to get into detail for a little bit, but just wanted to, you know, run through the results of the card there at the Barclays Center real quick. Pretty much going to go, I would say, from the first fights that were on the card that was on the webcast. If you're able to catch Showtime Sports webcast, they had a few fights on there that you could catch. They had the women's lightweight fight between Katie Taylor and Jasmine Clarkson, where Katie Taylor was able to move to 6-0 by basically getting a TKO victory, or making the corner stop the fight. The corner of Jasmine Clarkson stopped the fight. And she moved to 6-0. Katie Taylor did, while Jasmine Clarkson moved to 4-9. You also had a super flyweight fight on there with Rashay Warren, who is from Cincinnati, Ohio, similar to the one of the guys that was in the main event, Adrian Broner. And he went up against McJoe Arroyo. Yeah, Rashay Warren there, that came in there 14-2. He had the notable fights against Juan Carlos Payano, first one in 2015, where he lost by a split decision, and then the rematch in 2016, where he got the majority decision to win the WBA and IBO Super, or the, I wouldn't say Super, but the Bantamweight Championships. But then in the next fight, where he had his first defense of those titles, he went up against Nazarkyanov in February of this year and ended up losing a split decision there to him. So this was a response fight to him against McJoe Arroyo, who was a super flyweight champion back in 2015, but lost a unanimous decision to Jermaine Ancajas in September of 2016 to lose that super flyweight title. So he was there coming off of a loss. And this was basically a back-and-forth fight between those two. But went to the scorecards, and Rashad Warren was able to beat Miguel Arroyo by unanimous decision. He got a score of 118-110 and two scores of 117-111 to get that win. And this was a super flyweight title eliminator in the for the IBF. So you'll see Rashad Warren pretty much competing for the IBF super flyweight title here real soon. Next, that was on the docket in that Showtime webcast was a heavyweight fight between Jarrell Big Baby Miller and Gerald Washington. You have Jarrell Miller there at 18-0-1, and Gerald Washington was coming in there at 18-1-1. This was, you know, basically a fight, a barometer fight, I would say, for, you know, both guys. You had Jarrell Miller there, you know, pretty much getting into it. He had a fairly long layoff, almost a one-year layoff, through his last fight against Fred Cassie for a North American Heavyweight Championship, where he was able to have the corner stop the fight there. And then going up against Gerald Washington, who came in there 18-1. Of course, notable because he was the fighter that took on Deontay Wilder for the WBC Heavyweight Championship. Pretty much was a replacement fighter, as the original opponent for Deontay Wilder was not able to be there to fight against Wilder because he failed a drug test. So Gerald Washington was able to take on Deontay Wilder earlier this year in February for the WBC Heavyweight Championship, and pretty much gave it a fairly good go against Deontay Wilder for a few rounds before getting knocked down, and then afterwards getting up from that knockdown. And then after a little bit of a barrage by Deontay Wilder, the referee stepped in and stopped the fight. So he was coming in there 18-1-1 against Jarrell Miller, and was going to be something there where, you know, we see where both fighters would be at this point of their careers. Like I was saying with Gerald Washington, he was able to compete for the WBC Heavyweight Championship as a voluntary contender, and Jarrell Miller was in, you know, some of these boxing organizations' rankings, but not ranked in the WBC. The highest ranking he has is WBO ranking at number two, below Huey Fury and the champion Joseph Parker. So he was going up against here Gerald Washington to see if, you know, he could get, you know, back into the thick of things in the heavyweight division, as he was, you know, looking for a fight against Joseph Parker to be named as the number one contender, but the WBO chose Huey Fury instead. And so in the meantime, Jarrell Miller was looking for a fight to have, and he got this fight here against Gerald Washington. It was something, it was like a hometown crowd a little bit for Jarrell Miller there early on, as the crowd started to fill in for the live Showtime telecast, which was later on in the night. But of course, one of the most noticeable things about this particular fight was with Jarrell Miller coming into the fight. He came into the fight at 298 pounds. So that was just something there that was going to be noticeable coming into the fight, was how was he going to hold up as he was 298 pounds coming into the fight. But he was able to, you know, do what he pretty much won it against Gerald Washington. Gerald Washington didn't give that much of an effort. I would say he was throwing like arm punches instead of throwing anything that was of, you know, any validity or with any fire behind them. And so Jarrell Miller was able to shake most of those punches off and continue to pursue Gerald Washington. And what he was able to do was get Gerald Washington in trouble a couple of times. Wasn't able to knock Gerald Washington down, but he had like a big lead after 8 rounds. Pretty much won every single round in that particular fight. And the corner of Gerald Washington ended up stopping the fight after 8 rounds. So Jarrell Miller moved to 19-0-1 against Gerald Washington. And so you had those, you know, 4 fights that were pretty much shown there on the Showtime webcast on YouTube for those that were able to catch it. Right now I have the caller in here, area code 205. What's going on with you?
Hey, what's going on, James? This is Mike Brady.
All right there, Mike. How you been doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Doing good. Doing good here. Just, you know, going through what happened over the webcast on Showtime that was on YouTube. You know, talked about Rashay Warren, you know, getting back into it after losing the titles that he had earlier this year in Toledo. But he was able to get back into it with the win over Miguel Arroyo for the unanimous decision. And you had the Katie Taylor fight, where she was able to get her opponent to quit on the stool. And then the heavyweight fight between Jarrell Miller and Gerald Washington. So just went through those results. What are your initial thoughts about what happened within those 3 fights?
So I only saw the highlights for the first 2 fights, but definitely the Washington-Miller fight. Like you said, the most noticeable thing was Miller's weight. He was pretty big. And I guess it served him well fighting against someone who, as you said, was throwing arm punches and also fatigued pretty well or pretty swiftly.
Yeah.
I think that's a bad combination to have, that to not have any pop on your punches, and then you get tired after 2 rounds or after, you know, two rounds pretty much.
Yeah, 2 rounds. Yep.
Yeah. Jared Washington ain't going to make it very, very far. You know, like he'll probably just be, you know, somebody who they put in there for the Heyman fighters, because he ain't got the puncher's chance to just hurt nobody in the first round and win no fight. So,
yeah,
man, it's a
I thought he would have, you know, been able to give Jarrell Miller some trouble with that. I thought he would, you know, take Jarrell Miller, you know, out to, you know, having him work a little bit, but he just didn't do that. Especially, you know, like I was saying, with Jarrell Miller being 298 pounds, you would think that he would, you know, Gerald Washington would try to do something to, you know, increase his work rate to, you know, make Jarrell Miller have to move a little bit to avoid punches or, you know, or try to follow Gerald Washington during the fight. But he didn't make much of an effort to, you know, do that. And like you were saying, after 2 rounds, it was Gerald Washington that was the one that was looking tired and, you know, throwing arm punches and not really having anything behind what he was doing. To be completely gassed like that, that soon or that early in the fight is a concern. And he wouldn't be able to, you know, go up against top contenders within the heavyweight division if he's, you know, getting tired that early. You know, I really don't see, you know, where he could or how he could factor into, you know, the heavyweight race unless, you know, he fights or they might give him a fight against the, you know, Dominic Brazil maybe in the near future with Dominic Brazil not really having a fight in the cards here that we've basically seen him in. So
that
would
be
something there where. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I mean, with Washington not being able to, you know, have a fast start here in this fight against Jarrell Miller, then, you know, how is he going to be able to, you know, be able to do something against Brazil? You know, I mean, even with Brazil, Brazil has its flaws of its own. I mean, we saw that against Amir Mansour. But, you know, here, I mean, it's like Gerald Washington's there at heavyweight, looks the part, but doesn't do as far as, you know, what he could do inside that ring.
Yeah. How much did Gerald Washington weigh out of curiosity?
I think it was like around the 245 range or something like that. I think it was like 245 to 250.
Okay.
You know, not
in the way of
you know, not
down
to that. You know, but I thought he was, you know, able to, you know, be in. I mean, he looked like he would have been in better shape, but even with that, that still didn't help him out, you know, against Jarrell Miller. Have another caller in here, area code 202. What's going on with you?
Hey, this World Rank calling in, man. I'm a little disappointed I lost my money on Broner. But yeah.
Hey, I could have told you not putting that on him. I'm just saying. I'm saying it's aspect shit.
No,
I thought about putting money on it too.
But. Let me not say I regret it. I don't want to say I regret it because the price was so good.
Yeah, it was. I almost got fooled by that, man. I was like, but I just.
I think if it was the same price, I would still have done it. I think what it I thought Broner would gonna do. The judges was on his side, and that's something I took. And I was talking about that last week. I thought, I just thought politics was gonna play in it. If he did a little more, I think he would have got the decision. And I had thought that.
Yeah,
you know,
will.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm saying. Yeah. I would say like real quick. I just thought that you know I pretty much knew that Garcia would be able to do what he was gonna was what he did do in this particular fight, and I'll get into that a little bit later too. But you know, here now I was talking about the Jarrell Miller Gerald Washington fight. Were you able to catch that World Rank?
Can I ask him one quick question before he started talking about Gerald Washington? You got me in that 3-1 or 5-1? Which one you got in it?
I got it at 4.75-1. So that was like a month ago. I got him at almost $5, basically. I thought yesterday, and I put this on Twitter yesterday, I could have hedged with Garcia back because Garcia had got so low, I could have hedged it and made money off either opposite, but I just let it ride. I don't regret it, but it is what it is.
But 4.7-1, I mean, a month ago, had I known that, I probably would have bet on that too, to be real.
I thought it was an evener fight. I think the odds by the time fight night came where it was 2-1, I thought that made more that was more reasonable.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, but, if this is one you're gonna bet, this probably would have been the one, like Timothy Bradley was probably like a 2-1 underdog, something like that. But I kinda knew he was gonna win, but I didn't trust Broner. But I guess we can talk about Gerald Washington.
So the good thing about it, I did have some money on Gerald Miller and Rashid Warren. So those played out well. I didn't really make money. I kind of got my money back. So on that end, you know, I did all right. Gerald Miller.
So you broke even on that?
Yeah, I kind of broke even. Gerald Miller, I think, I thought he would have more power. I mean, 300 pounds, he carried the weight well. This fight speak more to the stamina of Washington. Big Baby did his thing. You know, he warmed down, but Washington, like you guys said, after the first round, he seemed like he had shot his load, and he was just. I'm surprised he made it that far in the fight. I mean, you know, he had one round where he landed something early. It was late in the fight. He had his little 15-second stand, but between that, he was done after the first round.
And after that, he really was done. Like after that, you could even see his demeanor was like you was questioning whether or not he wanted to even finish the fight. After he just threw that, like, last hurrah, it was definitely over.
And Danny Jacobs had said something to that early in the fight. He was talking about the temperament of what he saw in Washington's face.
Yeah, he did. I mean, it almost looked like it was just a, you know, regular day of the job for Gerald Washington out there. And, I mean, it was, you know, a big win for Gerald Miller to get back into things, you know, after, you know, not being in the game for almost a year. But it wasn't like, you know, anything I would say that was overly impressive. I mean, even, you know, with them being 298 or whatever it is, it was just like a basic, you know, pretty much like an ordinary day in the office or something like that. Yeah, he was able to pursue Gerald Washington and things like that, but it's like you were saying, there wasn't really much that Gerald Miller did that, you know, had much power or pop behind him. I think he could have scored a knockdown if he was more focused on getting the uppercut in the inside against Gerald Washington, because that punch was open for him the whole fight, and I think it was pretty much the most effective punch that Gerald Miller had against Gerald Washington, but he didn't necessarily, you know, follow that up or, you know, try to pursue it a little bit more to, you know, get Gerald Washington out of there.
So I would say this fight, to me, speaks to the greatness of Deontay Wilder. All these people who don't have no win in the heavyweight division, which includes the Joshuas of the world, which include the Big Baby Millers of the world, these guys ain't going to be able to compete if they start to not be able to pedal, you know, when the waters get deep. Like, early, Joshua definitely has a great chance early, but if he get past round six and he ain't working on his stamina, it ain't going to bode well for him.
Mike Reddy, I thought we was cool, man. I thought we was cool. I thought we had a little moment there. But
no, we actually, what I'm just saying.
Let's not act like Wilder didn't have. It was one of his fights where he blew his load too when he came back. It was either Duhamel or it was somebody else. So I mean, all these guys, you know. No, it wasn't Washington. It was either Duhamel or Molina. It was somebody. One of those guys where he threw, I don't know what round it was, but he threw all his, and it took him a couple of rounds to get right. So, I mean, all these guys, you know, it's the heavyweight division. When they throw, it takes much more energy.
Yeah, I think it was a two-class fight.
Yeah, so when these guys throw, it does take much more energy than a flyweight or a lightweight to do it. So, I mean, for in those size of guys to be athletic, I mean, it's going to take more out of them.
Yeah, I think it was that dual qualified fight because the in the Molina fight, I think early in that fight, Molina actually tagged Wilder and was able to hurt him. I think it was like in round three, but Wilder was able to, you know, pace himself and respond and score a couple of knockdowns in that fight before, you know, eventually knocking Molina out. I think it was the one where with Duopar, I think he had Duopar in trouble, but, you know, Johan was able to, you know, weather that storm and then, you know, continue to work on Deontay Wilder, which, you know, led to that cut that he had in that particular fight before he was able to finish Duopar off. So I think that's where, you know, that came in. But I think that point that you were raising there, world ranked, is something that was mentioned in that fight where, you know, they'll say, like, you know, the guys that, you know, super flyweight or lightweight or whatever it is, they're able to, you know, throw more punches and throw punches in bunches where, you know, you can't really necessarily do that at heavyweight because that takes a lot of energy out of you. And if you don't necessarily have the, you know, cardio or whatever it is, and then you try to, you know, throw everything you can on like that on one round, by the time that's all done, you're pretty much gassed out. And we've seen it with Anthony Joshua. We've seen it with, you know, at one point with Deontay Wilder, and we see it here with Gerald Washington. So here, as a heavyweight, you know, Washington will have to do better as far as, like, pacing himself if he wants to compete with even the, you know, mid-level guys in the heavyweight division now. In reference to Gerald Miller, I mean, I just got to see if he's, you know, able to do something with, you know, with his weight or something like that. I don't think that, you know, he could stay there at a 298 or 290 can compete against somebody that would be, you know, even a little bit taller or, you know, throws a little jab like that or whatever it is. What I want to do is see how Joseph Parker fares against Yuri Fury. And if he does well against Fury and wins that fight, then he might see Jarrell Miller just say, hey, I'm next in line for that WBO belt. So then, you know, why not, you know, challenge me or, you know, give me a shot there. But if that doesn't happen, then he has that, you know, immediate option where after the fight he called out Dillon White, and Dillon White responded to that call out and said, hey, why not make this fight happen, you know, by the end of September or maybe in the beginning of October. I don't know if it'll, you know, be as soon as September. That's pretty much, you know, 4 to 6 weeks away. So you would put, you know, Jarrell Miller right back there in the gym. That's the case if, you know, Eddie Hearn could work something out with those two guys. So what about that as a potential matchup, Jarrell Miller against Dillon White? I think that would be a, you know, a heavyweight fight where it's like first one that doesn't get real tired and punch himself out wins.
Who you talking? Who you said now?
Jarrell Miller against Dillon White.
I don't know. I think Dillon White at least throw his hands, and he throw them with bad intentions. At least a couple of fights I saw him in, and don't get me wrong, Miller was throwing his hands too, but I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, at least with, you know, White, you could see that he, you know, tries to put something behind those punches, or he has, like, more behind his punches, it looks like, than, you know, Jarrell Miller has here at this point. I mean, he was able to do that, you know, against Anthony Joshua at one point. He was able to do that against Derek Chisora also, as far as, like, a couple of key fights that he had where, you know, he was able to give a good showing and, you know, he won that fight against Chisora, but ended up losing to who? Anthony Joshua. World Rank, what you think about that matchup?
When I was watching the fight yesterday, I actually, without looking at him, when his back was turned, he looked just like Dillon White, from the haircut to the body type. Of course, he's bigger, but they are like,
yeah.
even in the fight style, they are identical, really, other than Miller's like size. So I think in their styles, they're a similar style, so it'll mesh real well. I think it's a style wise, it's a real good fight.
Yeah, I think it's a very good fight too. I mean, it would be something to where I just don't see, you know, initially where, you know, one guy would have a clear advantage over the other. I think both would be, you know, open to something to where they could get caught. And it would be, I would say it would be a toss-up fight here initially. I don't see where, you know, either one of those guys would be a huge favorite in the fight, you know.
Did he call out anybody else other than White?
I'm not sure. I thought he would have called out Parker, but I think it was Dillon White and then maybe somebody else. But I'm not sure if he might have talked about Wilder too. But I know, like, most notably, you talked about Dillon White and, you know, getting in a fight with him, you know, real soon. So that's something that, you know, I want to see if that could actually be put together, because I think that's a realistic fight that could actually happen, you know, while Jarrell Miller waits on if Joseph Parker defeats Yuri Fury or not, and then he'll be, like, waiting on the, you know, waiting out there to, you know, get that title shot later on, either by the end of this year or, you know, sometime early next year. Before I, like, get it. Oh, hold on. You got a question on that?
Yeah, I was asking, did either one of you guys hear about Miller and Wilder sparring?
I think that was, like, a while ago, though, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know the time frame. I had just heard it recently, and it was like Wilder had dominated him or something to that effect.
Does it matter if it was a while ago? James, does it matter if it was a while ago if the dude got dropped in sparring?
I mean, that's the thing, though. Sparring is sparring because a lot of people get dropped in sparring. Because Wilder got, you know, Wilder was, like, having issues against guys in sparring. So, but he's still undefeated, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, some people could take it for what it is, but, I mean, unless they, like, actually, you know, fight in a professional ring, you know, it's, you know, something to be desired on that. You know, moving on, let's see. You know, we got the thing here with the live Showtime telecast that they had, starting with that fight that was at middleweight, WBC middleweight title eliminator between George Sebastian Heelan and Jermall Charlo. You had Heelan there, you know, 29-4-2, pretty much has had majority of his fights in Argentina. Really hadn't won any, you know, major world titles in his career. Going up against Jermall Charlo, you know, undefeated 25-0, was former champion, IBF super welterweight champion, of course. Last year had his win against Austin Trout, unanimous decision, and knocked out Julian J-Rock Williams before moving up to the middleweight division. And then, you know, getting a immediate ranking of, I think it was like number two or number three for the WBC. And so he was able to go up there against Heelan, and it was pretty much an absolute mismatch from the start. I mean, to me, it was just something where I was like looking for how Jermall Charlo would look, you know, at the middleweight division. And I mean, to me, you know, just looking on his side, he looked very impressive as far as, like, how he was able to move around in the ring, how he was able to, you know, use his power and his quickness against Heelan, who was, of course, you know, much slower than a Jermall Charlo, injury or no injury. And the way that, you know, Charlo was able to, you know, move into the inside, get a couple punches in or get in the uppercut and then move off to the side, pretty much showed that he was, like, very comfortable in that weight. And the injuries pretty much, like, took a toll on Heelan because he wasn't necessarily hit with any significant punch, but he was, you know, knocked down once. And then in the second knockdown, he really didn't get hit in that. And then by the time he got up, he just, you know, fell once again while he wasn't, you know, necessarily dazed or anything like that. It was just that his legs were just not in there. And then so that ended up forcing the fight to be stopped in round four. And so Jermall Charlo is, you know, now the number one contender for the WBC middleweight belt, which, you know, depending on what happens in the fight between Canelo Alvarez and Gennady Golovkin, you know, Charlo may end up fighting Golovkin if Golovkin wins, or will fight for a vacant belt if Canelo wins, because Canelo basically says screw the WBC, so he don't want to fight for that belt on September. I'm going to start here with world rank. What do you think about Charlo and how he looked in the ring?
For me, this fight was a bathroom break fight. I didn't really watch the fight, so I can't speak on the actual fight. But I'll talk about some politics in boxing. Highland, he beat Macklin a while ago. He stopped Matthew Macklin a while ago. Became a mandatory to the belt. This guy waited almost 2 years for a title shot. He didn't even get it. He waited 2 years, just waited it out. Still ain't get the title shot, and they just fed him to Charlo like that. The good thing is he got paid six figures. The bad thing is, I mean, you wasted an airtime slot. You could have put Big Baby and Washington in this slot. It was basically it was a filler fight. You know, you waste. These two guys got combined paid $500,000, allegedly, for this fight. And I think it's just for a fight of this magnitude. First of all, I don't think a showcase shouldn't be on really TV to me. You got a guy who moving up in weight, and then you got a guy who hasn't fought in a while and is really relatively unknown. Looks like he came into the fight hurt. I mean, I don't know how you can evaluate Charlo in this type of fight. It's just a shame that, you know, they wasted TV time on this fight.
Hey, Mike, what you got to say on it?
Yeah, I wonder how Helen actually looked. Like, I'm probably not going to watch his fight, but I'm curious to how he would actually look without a bum knee. You know, because you could see he was trying, but, I mean, maybe he wasn't going to win anyway. Maybe he is a step below, which, I mean, it kind of appears that way.
Freshman orientation.
It may have been nice to see it in a better set of circumstances. But, yeah, that is messed up that, you know, 2 years passed and, you know, they force-fed this man to the Charlo brother. But,
yeah.
I mean, I could see that something was up with his leg, and I was like, this dude, just his leg locking up and stuff, and he really couldn't move. And then when he did get knocked down, as James said, one of them was a clean punch, but then it was more so when they showed on a replay, he tried to put weight on it, and then his knee, like, you know, buckled or whatever, and then he was falling, and as he was falling, he got cold knocked. And then the other one, he didn't hit him like clean. He hit him, but it wasn't like clean as the first one.
Yeah, it almost like a grazing or something.
Yeah. And then, you know, he tried to back up on his foot, and then it was just like he fell. And then when he fell, his knee locked up too again. It was just all weird. But, I mean, it would be interesting to hear what happened to his leg. And
that one was like a similar situation to where, Martinez. Sergio Martinez, going up against Miguel Cotto, where, you know, they didn't disclose that Martinez got injured before the fight, and so they didn't want to, you know, have the fight delayed, or, you know, he needed the money or something like that, and so they went on ahead with the fight against Miguel Cotto, where, you know, even though Sergio Martinez, as skilled as he is, his skill is basically, you know, also, you know, factored in with him moving around in the ring. And so if he couldn't move around in the ring, he was basically a sitting duck, you know, against Miguel Cotto. And so here, you know, George Sebastian Helam basically was a sitting duck against Jermall Charlo. And it was like, you know, it has been a messed up situation for him to, you know, basically be a number one contender for as long as he was, and, you know, not necessarily get that shot. But to me, that's kind of, you know, the WBC's way, I think. You know, that's how they've been for, you know, many of the divisions that they've been under for the past few years or so. I mean, you saw like how, you know, what was it, a couple of weeks ago, where you have, you know, Joe Smith going up against Sullivan Barrera, and Sullivan Barrera is like a number one contender for a very long time and still hasn't gotten that title shot against Adonis Stevenson. And so, you know, Helam is there basically sitting around waiting for that title shot. But in the, you know, in the meantime, they said, you know what, let's just have him go ahead against Jermall Charlo and see how he fares against Jermall Charlo. And of course, you know, with that injury, it was an absolute mismatch from the start. Now, I'll basically, like, get right into the thing with the main event where, you know, of course, you know, I didn't necessarily want to, you know, brag about it, but I kind of knew what was going to go down. Here you have this 140-pound matchup between Mikey Garcia and Adrian Broner. You had Mikey Garcia undefeated coming into the fight. He did have like a long layoff before coming back and having a couple fights before going up against Adrian Broner. And Broner had the, you know, losses against Marcos Maidana and Sean Porter. And to me, I think this was, you know, basically a, you know, a crossroads fight, I would have said, for Adrian Broner to, you know, kind of like prove himself to see if he's able to go up against, you know, somebody with the skills of a Mikey Garcia. But I just think that, you know, Garcia was, you know, the more disciplined fighter. He looked like the more disciplined fighter from the get-go. Broner kind of like threw out jabs, but it was almost like he was kind of trying to paw it out a little bit and didn't necessarily push the action, which, you know, I thought he would have done as the either the taller fighter or the guy with the longer reach, somebody that, you know, probably on paper would have been a faster fighter, but he didn't necessarily do that specifically in the first few rounds. And, you know, pretty much from, like, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say round one, but from round two to round five, I would say that Mikey Garcia pressed action. He was there. He was patient. I don't want to say the F word yet, but I would say he was poised and patient, you know, going after his game plan, pursuing Broner, making Broner go to the ropes, doing a very good job cutting off the ring against Adrian Broner to where he was able to score very well once he got Adrian Broner to the ropes. And pretty much like in the middle of the fight, he saw that Broner was, you know, having his show, pretty much his, you know, peekaboo guard up to his face. And, you know, Mikey Garcia was still able to, like, get a couple of jabs in. But, you know, while, you know, Adrian Broner was able to do that type of guard, he was leaving himself open to left and right hooks to the body. And once I saw that open, I was like, you know, just wait a little bit and watch Mikey Garcia come in with a couple of left hooks to the body. And that's what he pretty much did coming into those sixth and seventh rounds. And, you know, by the eighth and ninth round, it looked like initially that Garcia had a big lead against Adrian Broner. And it was just, you know, something to where I would say Broner would have to have had a knockout by round nine in order to, or a knockout in round nine or a couple of knockdowns in order to get back into the fight. He changed his approach at round nine, trying to get in close against Mikey Garcia and dig in with a couple of body punches and then step in and step back. But then once he stepped back, he was still doing the same things that he was doing from round one to round eight, and that is wait on what Mikey Garcia was going to do. And by doing that, Mikey Garcia was able to come back with a couple of one, twos, or three punch combos instead of Adrian Broner pressing action. And with him not doing that, he ended up losing this fight to Mikey Garcia by unanimous decision. And I mean, I would say, you know, with Mikey Garcia moving to 37-0 and Adrian Broner going down to 33-3. I'm not sure, you know, what else could be said here for Adrian Broner. Of course, the WBC got involved with this here, putting in a WBC Diamond Light Welterweight Championship when Terrence Crawford is the WBC World Champion. So that's another thing that the WBC does that's, you know, highly questionable or shady or, you know, whatever it is to try to get some money. But I want to get y'all reactions here real quick before I follow up on, you know, other things within this fight. I'm going to start with Mike Grady first.
Yeah, let me find my what I wrote on Facebook to give myself a reminder.
Okay, while you do that, let me say once again that I said this from once this fight was announced, I said that Mikey Garcia would be the I would favor Mikey Garcia because I just didn't feel that Adrian Broner was going to do enough in the ring to, you know, make Mikey Garcia try to fight him or try to respond. The way that Broner fought the fight against Adrian Granados pretty much left them open a lot to, you know, somebody that would be really aggressive or somebody that's really active. and Granados tried to push the action against Adrian Broner. And while Adrian Broner was able to counter a few times, you know, here and there, that didn't necessarily throw Granados off of his, you know, original game plan. And here, against Mikey Garcia, I just didn't feel that Mikey Garcia was going to adjust his original game plan in order to get back into the fight against Adrian Broner. I thought it would be the other way around. And while Adrian Broner did try to do that, he did it too late. And so, with that being said, I don't know what to make of what's going to happen next for Adrian Broner. I mean, I see a lot of people, you know, still trying to, you know, get him to have, you know, these potential matchups against guys like Danny Garcia or, you know, maybe Lamar Pearson and at, you know, welterweight or some other kind of high-profile fights in super lightweight. But, I mean, he's basically – this was his – this to me was his opportunity to say, okay, I'm good enough to beat – A-level fighters. And Mikey Garcia is an A-level fighter. And, you know, also to add in, he also has a A-level trainer behind him. So, with that, I just don't know where Broner goes from this point. I don't see him getting another shot to be the main event on a high-profile card, you know, against a Danny Garcia, which was thrown out there years ago. Him against Amir Khan was thrown out there, but that kind of like fell out the window. And according to some, it was Broner that backed out of that potential fight, so he ended up fighting Sean Porter instead. So, I mean, I really don't know what to make of what's going to happen here with Adrian Broner, but I got something with Robert Garcia here later on. World Rank, you got something on what you thought of the fight?
Yeah, so you guys' description of the fight plan and how the fight was going to go was spot on last week. So when you guys talked about the technician and what Garcia would be able to do, I agree with all those points. I'm always going to be from the aspect of conspiracy theory. That's just me. So a lot of my picks, I'll be able to back up with in-ring stuff. This particular pick, I wasn't able to because I just thought it would be an outside presence that would kind of dictate the fight. Clearly, I was wrong. Broner is always gonna be the guy who, against B-level guys, look great, look awesome. Guys that he can counterpunch and guys allow him to counterpunch without coming forward, without really having any real elite class skill. He's going to overmatch them. Most of the time, he is the bigger guy, so that plays a part in it also. This time is the same time. It's the same thing as always. Broner gets in there. He wants to look good, but he doesn't want to throw any punches. He wants to be the counterpuncher. I don't know if the McDonough fight, how much that – I think the embarrassment of that fight had him shell-shocked. From that point forward, he refused to let his hands go early in the fight unless he's facing a low-level guy. When he's facing at least a B-level guy, even from Paulie to Granados to whoever –
Granados, yep.
Yeah, whoever it is, he doesn't – he's just going to try to maneuver – and hope he gets the scorecards, get on a score. He's going to do just enough. Against the A-level guys, he's going to get outworked, and then later on in the fight, he's going to try to come on and kind of steal rounds. That's who Adrian Broner is, and that's always who he's going to be. He's going to be a guy that's going to have low output, want to be flashy but not be efficient or be consistency is always something he's going to lack in his career. And then after the fight, he was speaking towards the aspect of, you know, I'm a four-time world champion and people are going to come to see me. And I think, yes, people are going to come to see him. And Broner's going to, not always, but he's going to be a drawer as long as he doesn't get knocked out. So as long as he does enough to be okay and, you know, not get knocked out, I think he's going to always have that name cachet. in terms of what he does.
I think
he's gonna wait till the Crawford and Dongo thing roll over, and then you know how the sanction about it is. They're gonna start stripping. Soon as after that fight happens, they're gonna start stripping, and then he's gonna probably gonna get another bogus belt, and then call himself a 5-time world champion.
Yeah, I mean, that whole thing with Crawford and Dongo, you know, once the results of that happen, you know, regardless of who wins, yeah, I think that, you know, those sanctioned bodies will start going after whoever is the undisputed champion and say, hey, you got to fight this guy, we'll strip you, and, you know, they'll, you know, the whoever wins that fight will just end up saying, you know what, screw it. I think it'll be, you know, with me favoring Terrence Crawford in that fight, you know, I think that it might even be more of a, you know, mix-up, because if he ends up winning those belts, I really don't see him, you know, fighting anybody else out there in the super lightweight division. I think that unless if it's like a, you know, Sergey Dibanets or somebody like that, or someone, you know, moving up from 135 that he could, you know, possibly face, I just don't see him, you know, staying there at super lightweight. He'll make, you know, end up, you know, moving up to 147 and end up fighting Jeff Horn there. I've, you know, the whole thing about, you know, what you were saying about conspiracy theory things is that, you know, the one of them what that I've heard is that, you know, they intentionally had Manny Pacquiao fight Jeff Horn so that he wouldn't fight Terrence Crawford, and end up having Horn facing Crawford, where Crawford wouldn't be able to get as much fighting Horn as he would against Manny Pacquiao. So, you know, with that being said, I just don't know what's going to happen here with Adrian Broner, specifically, you know, with him, you know, floating up and down within the 140-pound and 147-pound division. I think a lot of people got thrown off a bit, you know, with him making that 138 and 1/4 pounds at the weigh-in. But and also not only that, but, you know, training in a location that wasn't over in D.C. or over in the East Coast, where, you know, a lot of people that, you know, that know him or that he knows would be part of that camp. So he was able to, you know, get away from all of that and still end up losing a fight convincingly against Mikey Garcia. Before I move on, I got 813 on the line. What's going on with you?
Hey, this is Terrell Hall from Tampa, and just a follow from that thread that you just spoke on in regards to the aftermath of Broner. Truthfully, honestly, his next to me, his next fight now is going to be more important than the Mikey Garcia fight. I mean, you guys know I've always been very extremely high on Mikey Garcia, based upon his resume and his style work. Just him. This is his resume from before he set out due to promotion issues. So for Broner, I mean, you had a prime Broner who, like I said, isolated himself for this fight, took himself out of the media, things like that. Just went out west to train for the fight, and like I said, came in at an impressive 138. And was, and in his words, he wants this fight. He's able to get up for this fight. So I'm not gonna take a whole lot from him that he didn't get the win, because I mean, me personally, I thought he's gonna definitely get a loss. The odds maker definitely had him at the lower end as well. So it's not a huge surprise. But for me, once again, his next fight is gonna be his most important fight of his career to me. And the reason why I say that, if he doesn't get a win against whatever opponent, what do we make of him from that point, you know? And I don't want to see him get no Bernardos of that stature. I want him to definitely fight someone in the top 25, either 140 or 147, wherever he ends up at. But like I said, his next fight is definitely going to be the most important and most telling for what he is going to be in regards to his future, to me.
Okay. As a response to that, I have a potential matchup at 140. I did, you know, mention something at 147 that, you know, has, you know, been thrown out there often. and that's Broner against Danny Garcia. But at 140 pounds, there's a guy by the name of Rancis Barthelemy who's a top contender there at the 140-pound division. And that would be, you know, an interesting fight for both fighters and something to where you'd be able to see where Adrian Broner is at that stage of his career if he's able to be there at 140.
Somebody said something about Granados not seeing Granados and having to be a top 25 guy. Granados is a top 25 guy, and Broner is that level. That's his level. I mean, we want to see him in big fights and all that, but he is that level. He is Granados level. He is Emmanuel Taylor level. If you look at those fights around here, around there, he loses those fights. So he is that level. He's not. I mean, he's a name, but again, we're making a name bigger than what it is. He is that level.
Yeah, I guess they acknowledge what you said about Granados at his ranking, but and all I'm saying with Broner, I want to see him string together a set of wins for people at that level before he steps up to fighting a top level guy again, because at this point, him fighting top level people, we see the result in that right now. And like I said, this is a guy he's in his prime. He separated himself from the mainstream to train for the fight. So there was no excuses. And he virtually gave no excuses in the post-fight interview. He definitely gave Mikey Garcia his due, which is great to see. That was a good sportsmanship for him. Good. But like I said, like you guys said, string together some victories against a Granados level and then go forth from there. Don't just jump right back into the frying pan with a top opponent, because we typically won't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw in my comment on it. Like this is what I had directly after the fight. So of course it was definitely a good win for Mikey Garcia, and I guess the biggest thing, speaking to World Rank's point, is that he is that level. I mean, you are what your actions say you are. You aren't what you say you are. You are a product of your actions, and so in those fights, he go toe to toe with those people, and when he does step up a level, he doesn't win, because if anybody pressures him and they're on a top level, he doesn't win those fights. But I was kind of disappointed in Broner's performance. It kind of appeared to be a lack of effort to me, and I mean, it was pretty apparent to see that Garcia was definitely the more skilled boxer, and they were on two different levels. You know, that's my first time like righteously watching Garcia and just kind of seeing what he could do. He looked really strong, like even moving backwards. And as a result of the win, I have a lot of respect for him. And I think he would be tough for anyone, but it would be interesting to see him against like real top fighters, you know. It's still kind of difficult to judge him to see how well he is, because he fought, and I'm sorry I'm saying this, but he fought Adrian Broner. And we kind of know who he is now. But so the thing is, trying to look at it from Broner's side, I can kind of only imagine how it feels being in a ring with a more superior boxer. And, you know, I'm not a professional or anything, but I just felt like he could have dug a little bit deeper. You know, he didn't throw punches to give himself a deeper, a better chance. And I don't think, like, toward the later rounds, like, his coaches didn't even say this, but Mikey Garcia was visibly, like, shook by them body shots when he was hitting them in the body. And he hadn't been going to the body very, very often. And so it was you know, enough into the fight to where, like, round eight or something, round nine, where he could have really just started, like, just doing that, like, you know, walking him down sort of, and just going to the body. And he didn't – that would have been the adjustment that he needed. That would have been the exact adjustment, because I don't know if y'all saw what's-his-name face, but he was like – shit, he was acting like Keith Thurman was, you know, when Thurman got hurt by that body shot. Like, I mean, he wasn't that drastic. I'm being – you know, I'm hyping it up more than what it is, but, you know, like, his demeanor was like, oh, I don't really like this. And that would have been the change right here, there, that he needed. And, I mean, I agree with World Rank, you know, he is a B-minus C-plus level fighter.
Mm-hmm. Well,
the narrative is always going to be, did Broner do enough? Every fight, we always ask ourselves, is Broner doing enough? He's disappointing. It's always, you know, he's underwhelming. Since he left lightweight, that's always been our perception of him.
Yeah, and I'll bring up the F word now. Broner wasn't focused in this fight. And the thing is that like we say a lot with Adrian Broner is that he kind of relies on his natural abilities to win fights. So when he's able to, you know, get by with his natural abilities, of course he's going to look good against, you know, guys that are slower than him or, you know, guys that don't necessarily have power behind their punches. But once, you know, his opponents get through the initial storm of what Broner is able to do and then they respond, it's basically now a matter of, is Broner able to weather his opponent's attack? And that pretty much was shown in the Maidana fight. With the Porter fight, it was just, you know, Porter just doing, you know, a whole lot more, smothering Broner up, not, you know, allowing Broner to box him and not being able to get off. And then here against Mikey Garcia, it's just, you know, Mikey Garcia being first multiple times in the fight, like over and over and over. And like I was mentioning with the body attack that Adrian Broner started in, like you were saying, Mike Grady, it did affect Mikey Garcia there, but that adjustment should have been made like in round three, or round four, or round five, where, you know, Garcia actually was doing very well in those rounds. So he pretty much had like a noticeable lead after round five. So you make the adjustment then to try to get back in the fight. You don't wait until, you know, rounds nine, round 10 to do it. And even then, you know, Broner still didn't throw, you know, a lot in those rounds. While he was scoring a little bit more often than he was in those early rounds, he still wasn't throwing as much as Mikey Garcia was. And so even with that, it just didn't seem like he wanted to put in enough effort to get back into the fight. All right, just getting into the overtime section of the show.
Can I say
here,
one thing?
And, yeah, go ahead. Continue with it.
So y'all say what's next for Broner? Broner won't beat Danny Garcia. He won't beat what's the other guy? I forgot his name. Who got knocked out by Matisse. He won't beat him, black guy.
Peterson.
From DC. He won't beat Peterson. He won't beat the real dogs in that division. Like, I agree with World Rank. It is going to be, you know, Terrence Crawford going to get all the belts. He's going to move up, or they're going to start stripping him of the belts, and it's going to be some type of, you know, like falling into a belt against you know, the B-plus, B-level fighter again. It's going to be a falling into the belt because he ain't beating most of these people. Like, I don't know.
Well, then he'll still
probably
end up fighting Francis Bartholomew then. Because, I mean, Bartholomew is number one in the WBA behind Ndongo. And so, you know, with Crawford being the, you know, universal champion, if he moves up to welterweight, then it would be, you know, Rancis Bartholomew, you know, trying to fight for, you know, a belt. And, you know, politics or conspiracy theory or whatever it is, you know, they'll have Bartholomew going up against Broner and, you know, put Broner there at number two in the WBA and super lightweight, because before this fight, he was number two in the WBA at welterweight. So, I mean, I think, you know, there they know that these organizations know that they're able to, you know, get what they could get with the guy that has more star power in Adrian Broner than, you know, any of the guys that are currently ranked in the WBA at super lightweight right now. So I wouldn't be surprised one bit if, you know, that happens.
Or do they cash
them out? It's kind of a shame, though. It's kind of a shame, though.
Hold on.
Because...
Yeah. Why you say that?
Well, it's a shame, though, because, like, World Rank brought up a good point. They wanted Broner to win the fight. And it's a shame that even with the power that be being behind this guy, he didn't give himself a chance to at least get a controversial win. Because all he had to do was press
a little bit more. And I was banking on that. And that was one of the things I went on because I was banking on that because if he does just more than what he did the last fight, maybe they'll give him a decision. And you can see he really didn't do anything until late in the fight. And some of the judges still gave him four rounds. So he had the opportunity, but he refuses to let his hands go.
Yeah, he refuses to engage, and I think you may be right about the whole thing with Marcos Maidana. That may have made him more reluctant to, you know, go up against, you know, guys with that type of skill level as Mike Garcia to, you know, let his hands go if he's going to, you know, fear the retaliation from it.
So but you try to say you don't think he's a C-plus, B-minus fighter, James? Is that what you try to say?
Oh, Broner, I think he's a B fighter. I think he's a B-level fighter. But I just don't feel that he's good enough to defeat anyone that would be rated as A-level. That's my thing.
Like, I'm not even sure Guerrero, retired Guerrero.
Is this team
he would be Guerrero.
I don't even know about that.
Is this team willing to go back and take them Emmanuel Taylor, them Bartholomew fight.
I got another welterweight fight, too.
I mean, they might just want to cash him out and give him Danny Garcia or Amir Khan or somebody like that because they're saying Broner can no longer be the A side, so let's just cash him out instead of putting him in smaller fights where he still might lose. Let's put him in a bigger fight where he makes a little more money, but at least we're cashing him out.
Well, if that's the case, then my potential matchup between him and Andre Berto is out.
Well, Berto,
I
would
have thought that would
Berto,
be there.
That would probably be the best fight for him, Berto. But I see Berto beating him, to be real. But, well, let me think about it. Do Berto throw his hand enough?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Because he couldn't do it against Sean Porter.
I mean, Sean Porter, a dog, though.
Yeah. Actually, Berto was at the Barclays Center, too. Well, both of them were. Berto and Porter were there to watch that fight. So, I don't know, man. Maybe, Berto and Broner could be a fight there at welterweight that would be, you know, possible. One thing here being in the overtime section, just had, you know, a couple of news and notes to drop in. One thing that was noted outside the ring before the fights went down or whatever it was, I think it was like either early Saturday morning going into the day or like right before those fights were going down, Tevin Farmer and his brother were shot in Philly, and both of them are at the hospital right now. Tevin Farmer got shot in the hand, and his brother got shot in the face. So, be looking for updates to see what's happening there with them. But, I mean, I saw like a recent pic of Tevin Farmer in the hospital. So, he'll be, he has like a hand injury, so he's going to be, on the show for a good little while right there.
His brother got shot in the face?
Yeah.
Like, feet
yes,
in the face?
Yes, his brother got shot in the face. Huh?
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't have much more details on that, but I'll see if I'll be able to get more as your updates come up. Also, they had a Golden Boy boxing card later on over in Arizona. The main event had Saddam Ali back in action. Saddam Ali, was a pretty much a contender at the 140-pound division. Moved up to 147 at one point, but ended up losing by knockout to Jesse Vargas in March of 2016. And he had like a couple of fights after that, but I really didn't see him as far as like a showcased fights, you know, until this Golden Boy boxing card that was on ESPN. So those are a couple of news and notes that I wanted to get in there. But back to the Barclays Center card. Like I was saying, with the win that Jermall Charlo had against George Sebastian Healing, a couple of people were, you know, talking about his post-fight comments, talking about he was the, you know, the second coming of Vernon Forrest and, you know, Tommy Hearns and whatever it is. And that kind of like, you know, drew the ire of some boxing fans that were out there. So, you know, anybody got something to say on it? Or Terrell, since he came in a little bit late, you didn't comment on the fight between Charlo and Healing.
I mean, just in brief, I'm glad to see that he made the decision. And really, the main question I have about this fight, how did that guy happen to be ranked at number one within this organization? I mean, it's definitely due to know that he had less competition than Charlo coming to the fight, but once again, he ranked at number one. So it's really a question. Who did he I guess he got one hell of a emotions behind his back. I mean, I wish I could get to promote me as well. You know, maybe I could be a title fight by the middle of next year. I mean, but really, just aside from that, I'm glad he got his win. He made it, and the guy had an injury later in the fight. But I mean, kind of fueled him when I backed out of the fight. How many times before have we seen before where someone's scheduled for a fight, i.e. Thurman or something like that, and there's all of a sudden there's some kind of undisclosed injury coming up at that point. So, but the guy went ahead with the fight. Charlo did what he came to do in Saturday. So, I'm really excited.
True. Nah, just seeing if there was like, you know, anything out and about as far as like what else y'all wanted to talk about. Of course, we have coming up next week the top ranked boxing on ESPN telecast, which will, you know, have the main event as Vasyl Lomachenko will be defending his title against Miguel Mariaga. So you have that, and I think we have also on August 4th, you're going to have Clarissa Shields going up for the Super Middleweight Championship after three professional fights, going up against Nikki Adler. That'll be on Showtime in her hometown of Detroit. So have a couple of notable fights, you know, there are coming up next weekend. Of course, here with that Lomachenko-Mariaga fight, we thought it would be a rematch between Loma and Orlando Salido, but that fell through. Also, as part of that August 5th card in Los Angeles, they'll have a Raymundo Beltran going up against Ryan Vasquez. I think that will be the co-feature there in that particular fight card. So those are, you know, the things that I'll be looking into coming in the next week. Any comments on either one of those fights or something else that was going on next week?
None here, but just going back to what you said about with Pacquiao, Horn, Crawford, that little small triangle right there was part of that tactical thing that happened. I mean, it's obviously they can't take Horn. And they expected Pacquiao to get the win. Obviously, that didn't happen for a variety of reasons. And even the appeal was, I mean, to me, it's a rare occasion when you appeal the decision of a fight. And this, I don't think this didn't warrant it. Was it a bad decision? Possibly so. But just looking, stepping away from that, basically they didn't want Pacquiao to get his ass tore up by Pacquiao. I mean, they didn't want Pacquiao to get his ass tore up by Crawford. When their little plan backfired on them. I mean, yeah, they got their payday going down under. They got that. But they definitely didn't plan for the contingency. So it's kind of funny you want to play games with another TIE fighter, avoid him at all costs, play games with him, and now look what happened. You got that pot thrown back in your face, and you see how it tastes for him. So it's kind of funny with that. So, but once again, 140, 147 is definitely the hottest division in boxing, I think. And at the same time, now we got activity at 154 and 160, which is definitely giving 140 and 170 a run for the money. And not only those two, those four divisions, but you got stuff going at 122, normal chicken weights, things like that. So boxing is really getting hot again. I mean, at the same time, if you get a few guys that grasp some stardom, you can see a definite resurgence in boxing, given the fact that MMA, I mean, they just had a big MMA event, so DC versus John Jones. That fight, first, you got no promo. And what's funny, I didn't know about that fight until this past week, until one of my buddies in the gym told me about it. How did they not promo this fight? In the normal fashion that they normally do for John Jones. Grant, I know he's coming back from a suspension, but you got their champion in DC, Derek Cormier. First to me, no promo. So once again, I said, boxing is just a few stars away from starting. Even if someone like Charlo can get some more key fights at 160 and make some moves and get some emphatic wins. Hell, like I said, all we need is a few stars in boxing for that resurgence. So I look forward to it. A lot of activity going on.
Yep. 2017, you know, like I was saying earlier, you know, within the first 4 months, they had a lot of key fights happening within the first 4 months. And here we are, you know, getting into August, and now we get into that, you know, we're in the last half of the year, but, you know, once, you know, things start jumping up around September or so, you're going to have, you know, a few super flyweight bouts going down. You're going to have the middleweight title fight between Canelo and Golovkin happening. You're going to have the World Boxing Super Series start off in the super middleweight and cruiserweight divisions. You'll probably have at least one or two heavyweight title fights in the near future. And I think Errol Spence will probably defend his welterweight crown too within that time period. So there's still a lot more left within the sport of boxing that has to be sorted out. Here in 2017, and that, you know, looks to shape up for a few good fights that will be left for fight fans to watch. And yeah, the whole thing about that Daniel Cormier John Jones thing, you know, real quick, you know, that's something where, you know, to be honest, quite honest, that was one of the first UFC fight cards that I watched. Not only did you have, Daniel Cormier versus John Jones, but you also had Tyron Woodley out there, I think. And, you know, he's like a controversial guy because he's saying that, you know, he just does what it takes to win. He's one of the best. He's the best guy that's in that division. But, you know, he doesn't really, well, at least in this particular fight that he had, he didn't really excite the crowd enough to, you know, get more. A good publication there, but in reference to Cormier Jones, that was one of the big rivalries on there, and Jones was able to do his thing, you know, was able to win the fight by knockout, and you know, end up calling out Brock Lesnar at the end of the fight. So I think you know they have to be able to do a few things here and there in order to, you know, have more publicity, because that should have been one of the biggest fight cards in the UFC in a while, you know, to have like a pay-per-view. I'll have to see what the pay-per-view numbers are for that particular fight card. Hopefully for them it was really big. Huh?
Was it Cyborg on there? For Cyborg on there too?
Yeah, Cyborg Jacinto was on there too and won the belt. Yep.
Yeah.
That was that. World Rank, you got something to add on to what's happening next week?
No, but I do want to ask you guys, do you guys think Broner will be a world champion again?
Not at 147.
I'll say yes. I mean, given the fact that there's so many
belts out there now. Dominic Leal's in the pack. I mean, to me, he's not washed up. He's not done yet. It's unfortunate, stuff like that, because we expect a lot out of him. But when he get another belt, I would say yes.
If he gets another belt, then they have another storyline, like, you know, like WWE, where they can be like, oh, I'm revitalized. They can play the revitalization card again if he gets another belt.
If you look at his resume to be a four-time champion, I mean, it's very – and I like Broner, but he's very entertaining in and outside of the ring. But if you look at his resume, and he always stating that he's a four-time champion, I mean, if you look at his resume, it's really light. I mean, he got a lot of questionable decisions. His run at 135 I thought was dominant, though. I'll give him 135, but at 130 and 40 and 47, not so much.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and you have the thing where he was able to beat Troy Yanofsky for that WBA belt before, and then and just that fast, he ended up having to have it vacated because he couldn't make weight against Ashley Theophane. And so that was a short-lived reign there with the 140-pound belt. And so now it's like, what else is he going to be able to do? I say that he isn't going to be able to win titles at 147, and because, I mean, you have Keith Thurman there with, you know, a couple of belts. You have Errol Spence Jr. There with the IBF belt. And, you know, he can't necessarily fight Jeff Horn there with the WBO. So unless if he's going up against Lamont Peterson for that interim or the regular WBA championship there at welterweight, then I just don't see him getting that championship there in that 147-pound division. And that's why earlier I brought up, you know, the potential matchup between him and Rancis Barthelemy, to where if all of those titles are vacated after Terrence Crawford wins, if he wins, then he'll be able to go for a vacant belt WBA against Rancis Barthelemy, who currently is the number one contender for the belt. So that's why I say it's more likely for him to win the championship at 140 than at 147.
No way he beat Lamont Peterson.
What is that?
I said there's no way he beat Lamont Peterson.
I'm not even sure he beat Rancis.
I don't favor Broner over Peterson.
I don't think they would screw Peterson either in that fight. I don't think, like, with Peterson's style, the way he does throw all the punches and he's going to be in Broner's face, there's no way they can beat him in that fight either.
Yeah, and in that fight, Broner would not bully Peterson. That's not going to happen. So I'm definitely in agreement with that as well.
Mm-mm. Nope, it won't. It won't. All right, on that note, I'm going to put an end to this episode of the show. We'll get back into it next Sunday night, 7:30. We'll review the fights that happened on August 4th and August 5th. In the meantime, like I say at the end of every show, Point of Boxing is a hit and not get hit. Not the sand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Have a good evening, folks.
Later.